Ready to maximize your travel and casino experience from both sides of the pond? From airline miles, hotel points, and loyalty programs to living in the lap of luxury in a Las Vegas casino, you'll find all of the knowledge you need to travel in style. Welcome to ZorkCast, powered by TravelZork, helping you travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures. Now, please welcome the hosts of ZorkCast, Michael Mason Traeger, and everyone's favorite Brit, Steve White.
Hello, and welcome back to ZorkCast. This is the first episode of our sixth season, and I thank everybody for joining us today. I have Steve here from the UK, as well as Gilbert of God Save the Points. So, hello, everybody. How's everyone doing?
Hi, it's good to be back.
I'm Michael. Gilbert. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for joining us for the season opener. We haven't recorded an episode in a few months, so we're a little bit rusty.
That I survived a whole season and I'm still here. You still haven't got rid of me.
Yes, and we needed a little bit of a break because I think
they usually kill the weak links off at the end of any season. Sure to be there next season, and all of a sudden they fall off of a cliff. So that's good for you, Steve. I'm really happy for you.
It's the one perk of COVID. I've survived.
That's right. So we have a fun episode in front of us today because it's always a special day when we get to speak to Gilbert. So that's really, really nice. We're also going to hear a little bit about Steve's upcoming plans because he's still not allowed into the United States. We have no idea when he'll ever be allowed into the United States again. So he's come around with a workaround because he'd like to.
Is that because he's British or is it because he's Steve and there's something we don't know about Steve?
No, it's because he's British.
Okay.
Well, that's what you think. Anyone could be listening to this. I shouldn't really incriminate myself, should I?
Right. That's true. But he'll have a few words on that, including the final words. And for casino history today, I happened upon a very interesting fact that had to do with piranhas and pigs. So we're going to be discussing that a little bit. So let's just jump into it. And once again, welcome back. We would love to hear, you know, send us messages, emails, Facebook group about what you've been doing as far as your casino experience. If you've been visiting Vegas, if you've been visiting casinos, if you haven't been, what your thoughts are, we'd love to hear them. So Gilbert, for those who don't know Gilbert, he runs a highly esteemed website called God Save the Points. And he's been on ZorkCast before, but for those who are not familiar with him, like to introduce him, and maybe he'll just give us a little bit of insight of what his vision is and what he does at God Save the Points.
Yep. So, hello, everyone. I'm Gilbert. I run GodSaveThePoints.com. Like many others, it's a travel blog. Pretty bored of it, to be honest. But in general terms, I would say that we talk about great ways to travel, what's open, what's not, how to get there, how to make it more comfortable, what to do when you actually are there, in terms of good coffee and things that are worth traveling for, food, wine, shopping. And other than that, yeah, we just try to get you into the site and keep you there and keep you there as long as we possibly can.
It almost sounds like a casino.
Is there a players club, isn't there? Technically, there kind of is a players club. See what I did there? Drop that in.
Oh, yeah. We have a premium membership, which is great. You should join it.
I already did.
You can tell Gilbert is his marketing finesse is just absolutely amazing. But he's, you know, I mean, I might have a little bit of bias, but I think the site is very well done. I think Gilbert's style is fantastic. There's a lot of humor in there. He does not take himself too seriously. And I don't know, I feel a really nice vibe and connection, more so than a lot of blogs that I read. So you've done a great job with that. What would you say, Gilbert, that drives you craziest in the travel content world? Is there anything that really annoys you or makes you cringe when you see, or like, then has that made you try to do things a little bit differently at God Save the Points?
Well, I'd say there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be there. You know, in terms of people just feel like writing because it's an exercise almost. And I've always tried to only write when I feel like I have something to say. You know, of course, within that, it's natural that things which drive, you know, traffic or drive revenue, you know, can motivate you to say something. But, you know, in a pure way, in like a non-joking way, if it doesn't need to be said, I'd rather just make myself some coffee or watch some television than write something that I don't think serves any purpose. So it's not so much about what other people do, but for me, what I choose not to do and what I actually do choose to focus on. I like to focus on things that, you know, if I'm going to write, I want something that someone's going to say, oh, yeah, that's good. That's very helpful. Like, I wondered whether I could go here, or I wondered if I'd be able to get that, or if this card made sense for me, whatever it may be. And that gives me pride when people say that was really helpful. I want to be helpful.
Have you found it's been really difficult, you know, since the start of COVID, just to keep yourself motivated and keep going? Because I guess I was always the optimist, hoping that things would have been pretty much so back to normal by now. And I would think the travel world and the world in general is anything but back to normal. So that must create a certain amount of angst for you on a regular basis.
Honestly, it's been a bit of a double whammy for me, because we had our first child last year. She's a year and a half-ish now. And so kind of as the world was going nuts and all this was starting, and you know, we were all respectfully doing the right thing and staying in, you know, I was also just completely falling in love with my daughter. And so I was definitely pulled in different directions away from the travel stuff. But in a sense, I would say that that actually helped me focus on to what I think matters. You know, I think that gave better perspective of kind of what I was saying before, of if I'm going to write something, I want it to actually be impactful, because otherwise, if it's not going to be impactful to my life or to somebody else's, then I'd much rather go watch some Peppa Pig and hang out with my daughter, you know, which is good times. So, yeah.
Peppa Pig's awesome. I know it well.
Yeah, Peppa Pig is great. I'm a big fan. But yeah, you know, it's definitely been an interesting year. I think it's just anyone who approached it traditionally, I have respect for. But for me, it was a really big shift in terms of the stuff that I typically talk about into, you know, the things that actually interest me. Like, I always want to know where I can go, what's open, what's changing, what's the perspective of this country. Are they, as many people have used the line, following the science, or are they just making, you know, whack-a-mole kind of style border restrictions because that's just what governments do? They're generally incapable, you know. So it's been interesting to follow. That's what I've been interested in. So that's what I've been writing about.
No, that's great. Is there any travel that you're really looking forward to? You know, it's interesting. It just dawned on me, like, you haven't done a lot of family travel yet. And if it wasn't for COVID, I would have to imagine, you know, you, your wife, and your daughter probably would have done a ton more travel than you've managed to do during COVID, just because of your usual life philosophy. So is there any trips that you're really looking forward to, or trips that you've been able to do this year that have been great? Have you, like, the whole family travel thing, like, has that been a change to you? Is that interesting? You know, I mean, because that's a really big deal, you know, traveling as a family.
Stop waffling. I got the question.
I like to waffle.
Oh my God. Someone's actually told him to stop. This is like amazing. I always try and interject and I can't get a word in edgeways.
Well, so of course, you know, the main travel that I'm most excited about is to Zorkfest in December in Las Vegas, where the host of this podcast will be hosting one of the world's greatest preeminent travel and other loyalty forums for people of all kinds who enjoy good laughs and good entertainment and good knowledge. But other than that, I would say we were really lucky this year, really lucky. And last year, you know, frankly, we kind of just, I want to say we rode the waves well, if you can say that. And I don't mean that in the COVID sense, but in a way I do. Like, we went to Greece last summer when it seemed like things were getting better, you know, and then the same thing. We went to LA and New York in October when it seemed like things were getting better. And that was fun. Obviously, things changed, those actual waves in between. But, you know, we managed to get to, I was in LA twice or three times, New York three times, Santorini once. We were lucky. We managed, you know, healthy travel. It was very different, you know, in a cool way, I would say. You know, we did Airbnbs mostly rather than hotels. We took kind of the extra precautions. We were more isolated. Palm Springs was awesome. We saw Michael in Palm Springs, which is really cool. But yeah, you know, it was different. It was longer, more purposeful travel. It wasn't in and out trips, which I think, you know, Michael alluded to, like we love to travel in a normal sense, but there was no like, oh, we'll just go to Barcelona for a weekend. It was more like we'll go to California for a month, but it was still really cool and really worthwhile. I felt safe and, you know, tested myself and those around me the whole time and been, you know, managed to make it through 18 months of COVID with travel without a positive result. So I feel pretty lucky, whatever you want to call it, but that's what it is.
And in some ways, some of this family travel that you did and some of the travel you did was probably actually nicer with, you know, a newborn and a young, you know, daughter than it would have been like just popping around to different places. So maybe in some ways it was a nice way for you to really connect as a family and with other people and just have more time in a destination. I know you mentioned Airbnb, and that's interesting. We don't talk much about Airbnb, and I think that is something that is worthwhile, you know, talking about. What are your feelings of, you know, I don't love Airbnb because of the policies where people can cancel and some of the non-refundable nature, but how do you weave Airbnb into your travel? Because I know you talk a lot about miles and points and luxury hotels and things like that. What do you think is the best, you know, time to be looking at Airbnb, or why people should consider that as part of their overall, you know, vision of like defining how they're going to travel?
Yeah. So I would say I see Airbnb as a multifaceted win kind of, you know, so if I'm staying by myself, there's not typically a way to justify it except for point two, which I'll get to. But when you need more than one room or when you have someone who you need to cook for, like, for example, we like to try to cook from scratch for our daughter. It's really nice to have a kitchenette or a kitchen where we can just whip something up without having to like call room service or order takeout and not know it's in the ingredient list and everything. I value that on itself a lot. But then, you know, kind of to the first thing I was talking about, I think Airbnb can be great for surgical reasons. You know, so for example, like I know Los Angeles very well. I've lived there. I like going there. I know that the neighborhood that I like to stay in, or like the two or three neighborhoods I like to stay in, one is Ocean Park, the other is Laurel Canyon. There's really not any hotels there in either place. They're between the kind of areas where hotels are. And so Airbnb allows me to stay in a place where I feel like I'm in a very local neighborhood, seeing exactly what I want to see, walking distance to where I want to eat and whatnot in ways that hotels just don't remotely allow.
No, that's great. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I have huge props also to Steve as a relatively young. How old is your son now, Steve?
He is about 15 months.
Right.
We're in very similar.
Yeah. I actually missed his birth because of COVID, because they wouldn't let me into the hospital until the last minute. I didn't get there in time.
Amazing. Yeah, we were super lucky. Ours was born January 30th, so she was like just before it all hit the fan.
Yeah. See, ours is sort of April time, so just after it all went.
Wow. But Steve went camping this summer, which impresses me so much.
I have very few interests in life, but things that I find insane are of interest to me. And camping is something I find insane. I think you have to be off your rocker to go camping. So please elaborate.
It was not my choice.
Okay, well that helps. You still have my respect.
But it was all right. It was okay. When we got there, we had a very nice camping site that we went to with very nice toilets, very nice camping sites. It was, yeah.
If you're putting it in hotel star terms, how nice of a camping site was it?
I would say it was probably in a good 4-star camping.
Really?
Site, I don't think 5-star camping sites exist. We had
no, but I'm saying, but like were the facilities, like was the bathroom comparable to what you would find in a 4-star hotel?
No, maybe I'm being a bit generous.
I was going to say, I feel like perhaps maybe 3-star, but
they were better than some like nasty hotels I've stayed in my younger days. Yeah. I survived. Would I want to give up nice hotels for it? No. Was it an experience that I would repeat? I probably would do it again.
You would do it again?
Yeah, I would. I think I would.
All right. Nice speaking to you guys. Been a pleasure.
This is a whole set. We've just lost like all of our listeners. It's all gone. They're like, wait,
this is what I did.
Luxury travel.
This is why you shouldn't have invited me.
You made it to season two, but only through episode one. Then you got canceled.
Oh my God. That is hysterical. So. Well, I have some camping stories, but I'm not going to go into
them. Oh, so hang on. So you've been camping as well?
It's been quite a while. I like to say that I prefer to camp at the Park Hyatt, but...
Did you have air conditioning in your facilities?
Not that I recall. It was in New Hampshire. Didn't. It was cold. Oh, goodness.
I had electricity and Wi-Fi, though, so that was good.
Okay. All right.
No room service.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I remember, so when you talk family travel, and it seems to me, I mean, at least from what I've seen on God Save the Points and in talking to you, most of your family travel has been pretty awesome, Gilbert, like real pretty smooth. But I think you had like one like crazy hotel stay in New York, right? Where the hotel is like a total disaster or something. Oh, and that's, God, and how yeah. do you, I mean, and we don't have to mention the hotel or the brand or anything. People can look it up. But what's so interesting there is when you have a young child or even kids up to, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, even 10 years old, when you have a disaster on a trip or when something's really difficult, it is like exponentially more difficult with a child when it's like yeah. that. And would you say that was your first time really experiencing that and saying, wow, I'm traveling, and now this is so much more of a pain in the ass than it would have been if I was just with my wife?
I'd say it's mostly just disappointment, you know, because my personality is the same, you know, regardless. Like, I always want to be nice until I can't be. That's kind of my tact in life. Like, if I ever have an opportunity to be nice, I'll be nice. But then once somebody takes that ability away from me by just continually fucking up, basically, then I wouldn't say I'm the best person to deal with. I'm fair, but I'm pretty exacting and, you know, I don't mix words, perhaps. Yeah, so it's just one of those things where I was just disappointed because I go to great lengths to try to make sure that I'm going to be happy. You know, sometimes like I get kind of the tale of two cities with how people respond to my reviews of things. You know, they either say, oh, you're too nice, you must be like getting paid, and like I never get paid for reviews. You know, I pay for almost all the travel I do out of pocket specifically so I can be unbiased, or I get the like, you're too harsh or too angry. And you know, the frustrating thing is that I try to do so much advanced research to make sure I'm going to love the hotel before I get there and that I won't have a bad experience. And I think that's part of like the art form of being good at this stuff. But then when I think I've done it, every, you know, 1 in 20 ends up being like a not perfect, or 1 in 100 ends up being a shambles. And then I'm just, it's just frustrating because you want to be nice and then you can't.
No, I hear you. What do you think? I mean, one thing I like about your writing is you tend to not be very sensational, you know, and I read a lot of different travel bloggers, and sometimes
just because like, I'm completely, completely underwhelmed by almost everything.
Oh, so is that? So basically when everything sucks, you basically just expect it to, because I'm amazed. What is your take on like, okay, right now we're towards hopefully getting towards the end of COVID, lots of changes in the world of loyalty. Obviously, the whole airlines, hotels, services, inconsistencies, you know, hotels, you could go on and on about, you know, services that are not being provided in hotels, hotels still charging the same price, loyalty program devaluations. Like, how bad is it really? Like, in your opinion, like, do you think it's, you know, and now we hear about like American Airlines with their like new contract to carriage, it basically just says like, whatever happens, just fuck off. I think that's what it basically says. I mean, like, what's your opinion? What's going on?
You know, I think it's so bad. I think it's really just so bad. I have two reasons for thinking that. I would say I'm a bleeding heart libertarian. You know, like I do have a social conscience and I do care about taking care of myself and those around me. But I also really like very limited intervention. And, you know, I am pretty bummed that the bailouts happened in the way that they did, where the airlines now just believe that they will forever be bailed out, whatever happens, because I've never, ever seen a benefit or public good from the bailouts which have been received. I'm all for, you know, creative financing that helps, you know, people benefit. But I think, you know, there's plenty of private market ways for that to happen. And, you know, to just see basically like, you know, all these billions and billions pumped into these companies and their reply be, yeah, we're eliminating like overnight hotels if we strand you overnight. We're, you know, completely just removing every safety net. We're devaluing our points because we mortgaged our loyalty programs to pay for our ridiculous plane orders. It's like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like there have been good instances where airlines receive support and there have been bad instances where airlines have received support. Same with hotels. But I think that they have no idea, for those who really matter, travelers who actually move the needle, how poorly they're doing for the most part. I think that the main strategy is that most people don't know and won't care. And that's what they're banking on. And, you know, if you look at the success stories coming out of like 2008, SPG was one of the few who did really well in the recovery of travel. I know a person who was a VP there at the time who was kind of in charge of driving that loyalty. And it was because they did more for all their best customers during these super down times. So like they upped the service, they upped the contact points. They, you know, expanded the use of the personal like concierge. They hooked, you know, anybody who had top tier status, they hooked their friends up with perks if they needed it, because they wanted to be sure that when travelers that actually mattered came back, they were happier than ever with their loyalty choices. I don't think that's happening anywhere right now.
That's a really good point and a really good way to look at it. You almost feel slightly taken for granted, and yet every excuse is COVID, of which we know some of the excuses aren't directly related to COVID. There are other business reasons, you know, maybe as simple as just being able to.
Well, that's the thing is I don't like to be lied to. You know, look, masks on planes, that's COVID. That's not, and that's a government mandate. I'm not, you know, in any way opposed to things like that. But you're telling me that you can serve first class passengers booze, but you can't serve economy passengers booze? Like, that's a commercial reason. Like, you're saving money, giving less because you can.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's, hey, you've seen it with airlines. You know, some of the long haul carriers, like I guess Lufthansa is a good example. They never really changed. I mean, they changed, they abbreviated the services, but still their premium cabin services had the glassware and the china and everything. And then you have other airlines that decided to use it as an opportunity to totally cut everything. I mean, I'm glad it's coming back. I'm really happy to see how things are coming back for British Airways and how, you know, it seems like things are getting back to normal. But I remember that flight to LA that I took in June of 2020, where it was literally you were handed a bag of crisps and a water and some sandwich. And it was just like, sorry, we can't do anything, you know, COVID. And, you know, it's crazy. And I think hotels, what's strange to me to try to figure on hotels, like certain services like room service, which we knew had to have a shift over the years, especially at four-star properties, you know, if it'll ever come back. And then you see some interesting developments like at Resorts World at the Conrad in Vegas. Well, Conrad's supposed to be a premium property, but that property doesn't. And Steve, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here. They don't have full room service. They're doing room service just using like an Uber Eats kind of get Grub kind of thing, you know, instead
within,
of doing
within the property. You can order from the restaurants and they bring it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna bring that up. I find that so funny. Like, you know, for the last however many years, you were looked at as a pariah if you like walked across the lobby with takeout, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, ooh, they're not eating at our restaurant, you know. And you felt like it was going to be a Larry David moment where somebody was just going to come up to you and say, like, excuse me, sir, you know, might I ask where your food is from? And, it's like, you know, and now because they're all so cheap and they've just thrown in the towel, It's like, they're like, oh, well, take advantage of our Uber Eats service. I'm like, yeah, I have Uber Eats on my phone. You're not doing anything for me. You're just saving yourself money by not operating. Yeah.
It's completely That's an interesting ridiculous. Point you're making, because I recently stayed a few times at the Conrad in London, just a few. And I see so many people now just ordering Deliveroo and stuff.
For sure.
And they have room service, and room service is back there, and it's the same as it always has been now. But people would do that a lot now, and it's accepted. Whereas you're right, a few years ago, I would have felt a bit awkward ordering a takeaway.
And a lot of them have only themselves to blame, because you know they jacked up the prices to insane premiums, which could not be justified by any chef in the world. And they, you know, put, I would say, very little emphasis. Of course, there are exceptions. There are some hotels that do amazing food, but you know, many of them jack prices up and let quality diminish, and then expected to compete against city restaurants, which are some of the best in the world, which were elevating their takeout game for the last few years. Like, how is that ever going to work out?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Yeah, how there's been a whole shift there. And now people are so conditioned. You know, COVID's caused us to use so many more of these delivery services, and also like grocery delivery services, that we've really become conditioned to use them. So we're used to using them so often in our daily lives that when you go on vacation, it seems like it's maybe just a common thing that you're going to do. So it is an interesting shift.
I think the hotels that got it right were the ones that like 10, 20 years ago said, we want to develop a restaurant that's so good that it becomes part of the community naturally, that like actual locals will eat here because the prices are fair, the food is damn good, and it's a great spot. You know, what you see, I think hotel bars were more successful at that than restaurants, but some did really well with the restaurants. And for places like that, it's great because they still have that profit center. They still are making money off those places because people still come. It's better than most of the takeout options. But I think the sad thing is that so many short-sighted leaders in the hotel world didn't advocate for that. They were just like, nope, why would we invest in top restaurant, top chef, you know, when we could just serve freezer bag fries with a crappy burger and, you know.
No, I know there has been a shift. And some of the hotel dining has gotten really good. I mean, I think it's always it sometimes feels like it's a customer exploitation thing. Like mini bars are a great example. Like you don't need to charge $12 for the Snickers. You could just charge a little bit above the premium and people would be happy. And not, why do you need to go to these extremes where you charge such a ridiculous amount that it's almost seems like you're being exploited. And there was some interesting articles recently about that, on how some of the food vendors in airports, I think specifically in New York, were doing the same thing, where they were charging like $18 for a beer. Like, why do you eat? Like,
who's paying this, though? I never do.
New Yorkers. That's like, I was going to say that doesn't even strike me as expensive. That's like a standard beer price.
It just gets to the point where it's like, how much do you need to take advantage of people? Like, why don't you want to give people a value add, make people feel good about spending their money.
If your business plan is to screw people out of as much money as possible and hope they don't notice, then that's not a very good business plan.
Yeah.
Do you think anything good has come out of COVID that these businesses, airlines, hotels should retain? So for example, you may hate it, but I really like the QR code system in the BA lounge now for ordering your drinks and stuff. I think that works really well. I've never had an issue with it. I've got drinks as normal. I kind of would hope that will stay, perhaps. Is there anything you think should stay?
Yeah, so it's funny, like that specific example, I know the guys who came up with that. They used to work at Virgin Atlantic and did clubhouses. And I believe they faced a lot of, what's the right word? Not backlash, but, you know, people were, I don't think were too excited about their idea for how they were going to revolutionize things internally. Which I find insane now, because it's been an overwhelming success. That was always the right way. Like, rather than having to try to like wave your arms and flag someone down, like you're somebody lost at sea hoping for a ship, like you just press two buttons and voila, whatever you need turns up.
It's great. You know what's great about that? It's technology that actually solves a problem. Like, when you can check in and get an electronic key and go directly to your room and bypass the front desk. Brilliant. When you can sit down in the lounge, scan the QR code, order a drink and something to eat, and it just gets delivered to you. Brilliant. I love technology that goes all the way.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, the frustrating thing to me is that so many of these things were always the right solution, but when business was good, no leadership teams ever greenlighted these kind of expensive projects to create technology solutions. They said, well, why would we spend $100,000 to allow people to order when they can order right now? It's like, well, because it's better and people will order more and maybe it'll make sense one day. But now they're acting like, you know, they saw this all along. And it's like, no, it took a pandemic. It took like a zombie apocalypse for you to actually see sense. So.
And surely for them, with a little bit, with the BA example, with a little bit of investment, you're actually saving money because people aren't pouring, you know, massive glugs of Johnny Walker Blue.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And it's also so nice when that technology just works. Like, I always laugh when you have a hotel that has like check-in online and you go and you check it in the app and it says, okay, great, you're checked in. Visit the front desk when you get there. It's like, no, this is not checking. I mean, if you're going to make me check in, give me the damn key when the room is ready. Telling me that, great, thanks, Michael, for checking in. Now you need to go to the front desk when you get there. That's like serves no purpose at all, other than to annoy me, actually.
Remember when you were at Bally's in Vegas and you had to use the app to find your way back to your room because you got lost?
Yeah, that didn't happen. Well, actually,
I was just going to say, I think, you know, we're just touching on the good stuff now. There's so much more to come. Like, just little things. I had a great experience changing some flights recently. I hate having to call in. I hate waiting on hold. And finally, now airlines have actually created those systems where, like, within their app, you can just like click, swap flight, bang, done. You know,
and I had that too recently with Alaska. I managed to, a flight time came forward 2 hours, didn't work for me because I'm flying in with one airline and then connecting with them. So I just went to the app and changed it within 5 seconds. It was amazing.
Yeah. All those things where, you know, I think for years, all these travel brands were very hell bent on doing things on their terms. And now they're finally understanding that, like, people like messaging apps, people, you know, don't want to have to call. They don't like picking up the phone. And the more of that, the better. That's what I hope. I hope that the tech teams and the development teams at these travel brands actually get the budgets they need to make travel better and solve problems, as Michael said.
That's amazing stuff. Before
we, is it?
It is. I love when technology works. I get so excited. And I actually get even more excited when they have like a backup plan when it doesn't work. You know, I didn't tell you this, Steve. So MGM, when I went to Park MGM in June, I think it was June, and I tried to download the key and it didn't download the key for me. So I was so upset, because I didn't have my key that I could just go to the room. But then it gave me a QR code and they had these great kiosks and I was just able to put the QR code right at the kiosk and get my key for the room. So I was like, that's okay, interesting. That's fine.
A lot of people hate those kiosks too, because they're like, I want to speak to a person. Because if you go to Vegas, $20 trick's going to work when it hasn't worked for 10 years now, probably. But anyway.
Well, what they've done, which is so smart, and Gilbert and I have had this side conversation is sometimes, I mean, all of that, pretty much so all of that is monetized. Unless you get really, really lucky, you know, the hotels know that they can sell you the room upgrades.
Yeah, they'll be the room like, do you want to upgrade for $20? And you're like, oh, well, it's only $20. It's such so easy to say yes. Yeah.
And now they have the options in Vegas. Do you want to prepay for early check-in? Do you want to prepay for late checkout? They've got like every single option of something you could pay extra for. So Gilbert, do you have, before I launch into my story about the piranhas, is there any good Vegas story that you ever have? Did you ever have like an amazing, like perfect, like entourage type Vegas moment in your life?
The only good thing that's ever happened to me in Las Vegas, I think, was when I discovered that there was a Bouchon bakery. And I went and I got lots and lots of cookies and pastries and sat in my room and had lots of cookies and pastries, I think. That was great because I love the Bouchon bakery.
Yeah, Bouchon is great. And they do. Bouchon, for those who don't know, is at the Venetian at the Venezia Tower. And they have a little smaller version of Bouchon, which is like right off the Strip. So that is super duper cool.
No, I'm kidding. I've had great moments with you, you know, when we got picked up in one of those ridiculous gaudy limos and driven to the hotel. That was amusing. I had some rubata with my friend Ed Pizza. That was pretty cool.
So here's one of my favorite people in Las Vegas. Well, two favorite casino people are Jay Sarno and Steve Wynn. Jay Sarno is the...
I thought you were going to say Steve White.
Yeah, and not Steve White. Jay Sarno is the creator of Caesar's Palace. There's interesting parallels because Jay Sarno created Caesar's Palace. And then after he created Caesar's Palace, he wanted to create a family resort, which was Circus Circus. And that's sort of interesting because Steve Wynn created the Mirage. And then after the Mirage, he wanted to create a family resort that was called Treasure Island. And then after that, Steve Wynn said he wanted to do something posh, which was Bellagio. And if Sarno had gotten the chance to do it, he had this vision of this resort called Grandissimo. Is that how you say it, Steve? How do you say that? You're probably better at that than I am. I just went blank.
I think Grandissimo. I don't know.
It is high. You know, it doesn't, I never thought about it. It doesn't really roll off your tongue. But when Caesar's Palace was opened in the 1960s, it really was amazing from the way that they themed the resort. And there was a restaurant called the Bacchanal, which was the signature restaurant at Caesar's Palace, which is now the name of the buffet. And they had this like endless wine. I went to the Bacchanal before it closed in Atlantic City, which was sort of similar. And there was a pool in the middle of Bacchanal. And when he was giving a tour of the property, Caesar's Palace, when Sarno was giving a tour during construction, he showed somebody, one of the reporters from United Press International, and said, "This is the pool in the middle of the restaurant. And what I'm going to do with this pool in the middle of the restaurant," it was more like a fountain than a pool, "I'm going to throw a suckling pig in that pool every night, and it's going to be gobbled up by piranhas."
That's awful.
So I was like, this is the most crazy thing I had ever heard, but it's an interesting Caesar's Palace history thing.
I don't know what to say.
And they claim that the reason why he wasn't able to do it is because he was having trouble importing the piranhas to Las Vegas. So
if I would have survived to today, probably would have gone a few years ago.
So anyway, that's my crazy history bit about Caesar's Palace and Sarno. But supposedly, it was a true vision of what he had. So before we finish up, Steve, so what's happening? I mean, you're supposed you've only canceled like 12 Vegas trips.
Well, already, I know. So. It's getting ridiculous, isn't it? So I finally reached the end of my tether. Wow, that was a real British saying, wasn't it? Do you have that saying over in the States? I've reached the end of my tether. So I've decided I'm going to go to Canada and I'm going to go to Windsor, Caesar's Windsor. I'm just going to go for a few nights. I'm going to stop off in Toronto on the way and it's going to be amazing. I'll talk more about it on a future episode because I know we're running out of time. However, I just want to encourage people to consider Canada as an alternative if you are waiting to travel to the US and you're looking for a great place to visit. It's an amazing country. I've been numerous times and they're finally doing the sensible thing and they've opened up now to fully vaccinated travelers. You have to have tests and stuff, but where don't you have to have tests for nowadays? So I'll talk a bit more about it in a future episode, but yeah, stay tuned. I'm going in about a month's time. So trip report.
And the casino there is like real deal. All American slot machines. Yeah.
I've got kind of bored of the London ones because there's about 20 games and that's about it. Although I had my big win. We haven't had a podcast since I won the $7,000, have we?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and Steve. Yeah,
that was on a £2 bet.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere. I still can't really talk about it because I just didn't know what to say because I didn't think it happened over here. But it did.
It's absolutely amazing. That's amazing that you did that. And we were joking about it because didn't something happen with the casino where you won that bet? Didn't they, because of staffing or some other reason, close down for a week or two afterwards or something? Yeah. And we kept saying, Steve, shut them down. <That's-> And for the American audience, it's very interesting, but there's no tax forms
But there's no hand pay. You literally have $7,000 worth of credit in your machine and you get a ticket that comes out like you do in the States and you go to the desk and you collect your money. I was like, I need to go now back to the hotel with this and put it in the safe. This is, it's not like in the States or anything.
And translate that jackpot into US dollars for us.
It's well, the exchange rate's not great now, but it's about 10 grand, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, yeah, that's actually amazing. Yeah, I totally forgot. I was so floored when that happened. I just.
Well, no, what I recall is you sent me a message saying, you didn't text me. And I was like, yeah, I did. You're just old and you missed it because I tweeted it out. But I texted Michael first because I knew he would get angry if I didn't.
It was one of those moments where, you know, sometimes with WhatsApp where it doesn't come through, everything always does come through on WhatsApp eventually, but sometimes something doesn't come through. So let's do final thoughts. Gilbert, 2022, what pops into your mind? Are you positive? Are you negative? Are you looking forward to something? What's on your mind about 2022?
I think the Islanders are going to win the Stanley Cup, which has been a long time in the making. That's probably okay. The most important thing on my mind right now. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got for you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And it's great to be back.
Yes. And we're back now. We're back now for a nice long while. We'll be doing weekly episodes. So you'll be able to listen to our dulcet tones. Well, if I'm here next week, as you know, I've been camping. So maybe I won't survive.
That's right. So anyway,
hope you've enjoyed listening to Steve, and hopefully the next guest is much better than I am. And over to Michael for the sign off.
Thank you very much, and thanks everyone for joining us, and until next time.
You've reached the end of your stay with us on this episode, but we encourage you to visit our website for more resources at travelzork.com and to continue the conversation on Twitter and Insta at @travelzork and on the Zorkcast Facebook group. Travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures right here on Zorkcast. Until next time, dream big, and remember, a dollar won is twice as sweet as a dollar earned.